Morning. Today's daf Mechoras Nun Hey. We are on Nun Dalet Amud Beis. We yesterday started the Mishnah, started the Gemara. We are in the Gemara's discussion debate. Let's take a quick step backwards. Let's start again from the Mishnah. The Mishnah on Nun Dalet Amud Beis opens up with Hitzarfus regarding Maisa Behema. Okay, the mitzvah Maisa Behema is to count your animals, and if you have 10 or above, so you're going to be counting them, and every 10th animal is going to have Kedusha. And you're going to bring it as a carbon, as a carbon shlamim for the Beis HaMikdash. So, like other areas in Halacha, where in order to count to 10, so you need a certain amount of itztarfus. You need to be able to say it's a unit. So by minyan, for example, it has to be in a room together. So the, you can have a minyan outside as well, but if you have like multiple rooms, so that would be problematic regarding making a minyan. So over here, in terms of making a minyan of animals, So there has to be a certain level of its starfus. It has to be a unit, and it has to be within a prescribed area. What is that prescribed area? That is our Mishnah, and let's open up. Ma'aseh behema mitzarf kamol regel behema roa. So ma'aseh behema can be mitzarf as long as it's within the foot of the shepherd. The foot of the shepherd, what exactly does that mean? So the Mishnah goes on to explain. V'kami regel behema roa. What exactly is regel behema of the roa? Tezayin mil, so it's 16 mil. So hayubain elo yud be. I'm sorry. Before we go on in the Mishnah, so that means to say that as long as the shepherd and its animals are somewhere within 16 mil of one another, so then that is going to be its starfus. And if we can, you're basically going to put a radius, putting the center point of being the shepherd, and a radius of 60 mil, and 60 mil anywhere around is going to be animals that are included and counted in Maisa Behema. So we did a little bit of math yesterday. So it's about 16 kilometers. It's about 10 miles. Okay, visibility being 10 miles. That's, you know, as we pointed out yesterday already, that's it sounds like a lot. It sounds you need really, really clear weather and clear day, but and clear vision. Right. Good point. Okay. So the all right. Anyway, that's
bigger than that and fenced in.
Ostensibly.
Huh?
Could be. I don't, could be.
Sounds to me like that's a criteria.
Could be. Absolutely. How you mean elo elo amid beis mil? The Mishnah then goes on to say, well, let's say our animals are 32 mil distance one from another. Now, 32 mil obviously is way too much, meaning anything above 16 is too much. So, but the Mishnah over here puts that 32, and you'll see in just a moment why the Mishnah chooses number 32. A mitzarfin. So obviously it's not going to be mitzarf because they're too far away from one another. Hayilo be'emtza. But let's say now we were take an animal and put that animal right in the middle. So mevi umma asran be'emtza. So now this central animal is going to be able to combine the two exteriors. Like I said yesterday, if we could just simply plot a line where the two extremes are going to be points A and C, where they're 32 mil from one another, the central point B, so that's going to be equidistant from the two central points, that's 16 mil from our two exteriors, from A and C. So now what B is able to do is B is able to incorporate and put them all together. And now the Mishnah, by the way, I made this comment yesterday as well, the Mishnah says, mevi umasram be'emsa. So you have to bring the exterior animals into the middle in order to do Maisa Behema. In other words, at this point in time, we have it starfus. So you don't have to actually bring them all together, but just from a practical standpoint, you're going to bring them anyway into count. But it starfus has occurred already. Rabbi Meir Omer Hayanim Mafsik LaMaisa Behema. And then Rabbi Meir makes a comment at the end of the Mishnah, which is going to be really most of our daf today, is going to be focusing on this comment of Rabbi Meir, which is that the Yardin is going to be separation. If I have animals on one side of the Yardin and animals on the other side of the Yardin, so they do not combine and they do not create a hitzarfus for my 10 animals for reasons which will be explored later this morning. We start with the Gemara on Nun Dalam and Beis Menahan Nimili. So how do I know this? I'm a rabbi, Barshila, I'm a krab. Now what the Gemara is looking for is the source of our Mishnah's idea that as long as there is visibility for one person to be able to count all the animals, so that's going to be grounds for hitzarfus. How do I know that that's in fact so? How do I know that that is the determinant of this particular halacha? Gemara quotes the pasuk in Yirmiyahu, "Ota avorna atzona ide moneh." The pasuk in Yirmiyahu describing us coming back into Eretz Yisrael after being in Galus Bavel, and we're going to come back with so much sheep that we're going to need counters to count our sheep. So you see that in terms of what makes my sheep going to be shaykh to me is that moneh. I have a counter, and the counter obviously needs visibility as long as he has a vantage point to see the sheep and be able to count the sheep. So then we have a collection of sheep. The Kimlu Rabbanan de Shitzer Mil Kashalta Be'ena Derawa. Now, the Pasuk in Yirmiyahu establishes visibility as being the determinant. But in terms of what is visibility, so that the Chachamim gauged. And the Chachamim did some experimentation, and they came to the conclusion that 16 mil is going to be the outer limits of visibility. Anything beyond that, lo shalta be'ena, your eyes simply do not see beyond that point in time. Right? Shalta be'ena, right? That's the term that we said back in Sukkah, in the beginning of Sukkah, when talking about how high can your Sukkah be. So if it's higher than 20 amos, it's no good. One of the explanations given over there, there are three in total, but one of the explanations given over there is that when the schach is above 20 amos, lo shalta be'ena, meaning it's just simply without, it's not within your purview. Obviously, you can tilt your head up and you can look upward, but generally speaking, you're not aware of it. So to over here, 16 mil in terms of a distance and where the shepherd can no longer see his sheep, so beyond 16 mil, it's lo shalta be'ena. Continuing in the Gemara, hayu ben eila shloshim v'shnayim mil ein mitzarfen. So the Gemara asked the question, shloshim v'shnayim hu de ein mitzarfen habatz ma'achim mitzarfen. I don't understand. The Mishnah over here is pointing to a scenario where I have one sheep at a distance of 32 mil from the other sheep, and there it's no good, implying that anything less than that would be good, but that's of course not true. In other words, anything above 16 mil is beyond visibility. So why is the Mishnah here turning to the number 32? So the Gemara answers, well, of course you're right. Meaning anything above 16 is beyond visibility. The reason why the Mishnah gave the example 32 is because the Mishnah wanted to set itself up for putting something right in the middle. It's only because of the next part of the Mishnah, which is really what the Mishnah was interested in. Meaning, you're right, 32 is well beyond the scope of visibility. But when I put something in the middle, so now that central sheep and that central location is able to be mitzarf because it's 16. It's equidistant from the two ends, and it's 16 from one side, 16 from the other side, and it's able to combine. Okay, and now, we started this yesterday, but now, okay, let's get into it. And that is the debate between Rav and Shmuel. So we are saying now that when I have our two extremes, A and C, at being 32 mil apart from one another, and when I take a sheep and put it in the center so then it's going to combine everything together, what exactly numbers do I need at the points of A and C and that of B? So we have two opinions in the Gemara. Amar Rav Chamish Mekam V'Chamish Mekam V'Chamish Be'emza Dani Chamish Chazal Hacha V'Chazal Hacha. So Rav basically says like this. You need five on one extreme, five in the center, and five on the other extreme. Then and only then can the center go ahead and combine. And like I described yesterday, basically it's a Venn diagram. So basically what I could do is I could take a circle and I could put a circle around A and B. And I will have 10 sheep within A and B. I could also take another circle and put it around B and C. And I will have 10 sheep within that. So according to Rav, it's not that the center bridges the extremes one to the other, but rather what the center can do is it can combine with one and it can combine with the other. But of course, it can't do both. And that means to say that within one, A and B, I need a full 10. And within B and C, I also need a full 10. Ad kan shitas Rav. That's Rav's position. Shmuel amar afilu chamish mekan vehe mekan ve'echad be'emtza. Chazinan l'roe keman dekai hacha ve'karina be'mona. And so, and Shmuel says no. Shmuel says that the center is actually bridging the two extremes. And so that means to say that even though it's a sheep that's in the center, but basically take out the sheep and replace it with the shepherd. Because the shepherd's got to be there anyway. Shepherd's got to be wherever the sheep are. So once I have a central sheep, so that means that the shepherd's going to be there. And so that means that once I put the shepherd in the middle, so now he's within 16 amos of one side, 16 amos of the other side. And so therefore, it bridges them together. I can have 5, 1, and 5, and that, according to Shmuel, would be perfectly fine. Because the center is just there bridging the two ends. Now, as we pointed out yesterday, it doesn't have to be 5, 1, and 5. It could be 4, 1, and 5. But the point is that the center is there not as just hit star for each of the sides, but rather a bridge bridging the point A to point C. This is our two opinions, Meisvei. And so what the Gemara now is going to be doing from this point going forward, as we now turn to the top of Nehemiah Aleph, is seeing which of the positions are better fitting into the Mishnayos and to the Braisos. Meisvei. This is a Braisa. Hayilo chamish bekfar Chananya v'chamish bekfar Usnai. So let's say I have five sheep in the village of Chananya and five sheep in the village of Usnai. Right? And we are all familiar with these villages? Of course not. None of us are familiar with these villages. However, as you can guess, and contextually, of course, it works out, Kfar Usnai and Kfar Chananya are 32 mil from one another. And what's the central city between them? Tzipori. Okay. Modern day Hoshaya. Right? Go up to Tveria, make a left hand turn, and like about 5-10 minute drive, and you're going to get to the town of Hoshaya. So, really, really nice town. So, anyway, so the, it's Tzipori. Tzipori of days of old. So, you are now, we have 5 sheep in Chananya, 5 sheep in Usnai, and, they're 32 mil from one another. The Brisa says, "Emitzdarfen ashelo achas b'tzipori." So you're no good, meaning you're not going to have itzdarfus until you have one itzipori. Okay. The clear implication of this Brisa is that one itzipori is good. One itzipori is going to create itzdarfus. So that sides now with Shmuel, right? So the Gemara says, yes, it's true, but to Yufta the Rav, and that would seem to be a refutation of Rav's position. The Gemara says, Tirgum Shmuel liba the Rav. Right, one of those nice moments that happens actually very frequently throughout Shas, and that is that although Shmuel seems to have a winning hand, nevertheless, what he's able to do is reinterpret the Braisa so that it fits and conforms to the opinion of Rav. In other words, Shmuel is not interested in winning, Shmuel's interested in the truth. And as far as he's concerned, if I can interpret the Braisa like Rav, so be it, so I'll do so. And in fact, right here, one of those examples. So Tirgum Shmuel liba de Rav. Shmuel said in defense of Rav, so the simple way of interpreting the Braisa is that I have 9 over here and 9 over there, and I have 1 in the middle. And under those circumstances now, it's not that B is bridging A and C, but rather I could take B and I could put it together with A, and that'll be 10. I could take B and I could put it together with C, and that will be also 10. So we can explain the Braisa that way, and it would work out. It would be a little bit difficult, however, admittedly, in that when you go back to the Braisa and you review the Braisa says, Hayil Chamish Bikfar Chananya, V'Chamish Bikfar Usnei. So in this reinterpretation of the Braisa, so what are we saying about the numbers? The numbers were a little bit off. The numbers were Lavdavka. Maybe. Amar HaPapal Shmuel, Afilu Ro Mitzarfan. Afilu Kelev Shoro Mitzarfan. Okay. Now, within Shmuel's position, what have we just learned together? According to Shmuel, so that center is a bridge, bridging together the two extremities. And I don't need A and B to total 10. I don't need B and C to total to 10. If A plus B plus C totals 10, it gives me 10, so that would be sufficient. Now, what we're saying is as follows. Within the sheet of Shmuel, so I feel a roem and mitzarfan. So even if I don't have an animal in the center point, but I have the shepherd in the center point, so that would be mitzarif. Now that point already seems to be self-evident, meaning if you go back to the Gemara, when the Gemara originally presented Shmuel in the bottom of the previous Amud, so the Gemara says, why is the center a bridge? Because it's like the shepherd is there. So clearly, if I actually have the shepherd there, so then clearly that shepherd is going to be a tzirif. So admittedly, this first point of Rapapa seems to be pretty clear within the Shita of Shmuel. But now we're going to say even more chidushim. Let's say the shepherd's not there, but he left his tools over there. The tools of the shepherd. Don't ask me, please. I don't know what the tools of the shepherd are. Right? Okay, but anyway, but the tools of the shepherd. So if they're there, so that's going to be enough to be a tzirif. And Rashi explains, because once the tools of the shepherd are there, so that means that the shepherd's coming back. Right? Rashi writes, Hov sofa dero lemezo hasam mishkalei v'karina beimona. So we know that the shepherd's going to come back in order to retrieve his tools. So now those tools are considered like the shepherd's there, and therefore it's mitzarif. Another chiddush, or a possible chiddush.
He doesn't have any tools, but his clothing.
Yeah, whatever. Right. His belongings. By Rav Ashi Kaba de Ramai. What about the dog of the shepherd? Came into Kari Leva Asila Mitzarfe. So now the shepherd dog. So is that going to be, is the shepherd have to go back there to retrieve his dog? So the Gemara now is questioning the loyalty of the dog. Well, not so much the loyalty of the dog, but basically how obedient the dog is. Now, if you call to the dog, so the dog is going to come, so that means the shepherd never has to go there. And so therefore the dog is not going to demand that the shepherd be there. On the other hand, sometimes the dog is not super obedient. And so the shepherd's going to call out to the dog, and the dog is going to pretend like he doesn't hear. And so now it's going to force the shepherd to go there. And so therefore the shepherd's going to have to go there. And so now it could be viewed that the dog is going to be a way of drawing the shepherd to that point. Maybe not. Teku, the Gemara leaves this question unresolved. Okay, Adkan. So what we have in front of us is a discussion in the Gemara between Machlok, between Rav and Shmuel, in terms of the parameters of the Mishnah. The Mishnah tells us that if I have sheep at points A, B, and C, A and C being 32 mil from one another, B being equidistant, centrally located between the two points. So how many sheep do I need at the various points in order to create Siruf? So Rab takes a more chamor position, a more stringent position, where I need A and B or B and C to create the number 10, to total to the number 10, whereas Shmuel takes a more lenient position where that as long as B is just simply, if A, B, and C total to the number 10, that would be sufficient because according to Shmuel, B is just simply a way of bridging between the two. Okay. Remeir Omer, Yardim Mafsik L'maisa Behema. Okay. Remeir is of the opinion that the Yarden is going to be a Mafsik. I have animals on one side of the Yarden, animals on the other side of the Yarden. We learned in the Mishnah, according to Remeir, that the Yarden now serves as a Hafsik. It will be a divider. And so therefore, I cannot put these animals together, I cannot count these animals together. As they are presently constituted, where some are on one side, some on the other side. Now, Amar Abi Ami, and what the Gemara's discussion is going to revolve around is the following simple and basic question. What is behind the sheet of Rav Meir? Why is the Yarden going to be mafsik? So we can say it in one of two ways, and the Gemara, in fact, is going to say it in one of two ways. And let's start off. Amar Rav Ami, lo shenu el she'in sham gesher. Aval yesh sham gesher, gesher mitzarfan. So Rav Ami says that this is really all a function of access. When I have sheep on both sides of the river, so what happens now is that the sheep on one side cannot be brought over to the other side. And so really it's an access issue. And that's why they're not mitzaref. Later, the Gemara is going to ask the obvious question. If this is true, why speak about the Jordan River? In other words, it could be any water that prevents access from one to another. Later, the Gemara is going to ask that question. And quite frankly, is going to be really stumped with that question. But in the meantime, however, this is the way Rabbi Ami is presenting Rav Meir, his understanding of Rav Meir. And that means to say that once you have a river, but you also have a way of accessing from one side to the other, otherwise known as a bridge, so then the river no longer is a hefsek. It no longer separates the two different groupings of sheep. Ami Mishim Delomit Karvinu. And the Gemara says it very succinctly. The Gemara says the reason why the Yarden is going to be a mafsek is because they're not close to one another. Close meaning, I'm going to, you know, use my word. They're not accessible to one another. Fine. Meisvei. The Gemara challenges this position based on a brace. Ayu lo b'shnei evrei ha-yarden. Eilech ve'eilech. If, let's say, our sheep are on two sides of the Jordan, one on this side, one on the other. Oh, b'shnei avtila'ot. Or maybe there are in two cities. And the two cities are separated from one another. They're close to one another. Gagon shol namar v'nimori. You know, like the cities of Namar and Imori. Okay, second time this morning, where pointing to towns, never heard of. I never heard of. Okay, but anyway, there are two cities, and even though they're next to one, they're close to one another, Rashi says, Afagav de smucha zulazu. And Rashi says they're within 1 mil of one another, so they're very close to one another, but they're closed off to each other. Ein mitzarfin. So they're not going to be a mitzarf. Vein tzarich lamar chutz aretz v'aretz. Now, for sure, chutz aretz and Eretz Yisrael. Some sheep are outside of Eretz Yisrael. Some sheep are in Eretz Yisrael, so they're not going to combine. Okay, now, the Gemara says, now what kind of access do we have from outside of Eretz Yisrael to inside of Eretz Yisrael? Now, I can make a political joke in terms of it depends on how high the wall is, but the Gemara's assumption is, v'achutz ha'aretz v'aretz k'makom sheish gesher dami. Now, the Gemara assumes right now that there's got to be some way of getting from chutz ha'aretz to Eretz Yisrael, meaning there's got to be some sort of border crossing. And so we have to assume it's like it has a gesher, v'ketani lo mitzarfin. And meanwhile, the Braisa says that it's not going to be mitzarif. So what the Gemara now is suggesting is that, Rav Ami, you don't have it right. Meaning if the issue over here is access or lack thereof, so what difference does it make whether one grouping is in Eretz Yisrael and another grouping is outside of Eretz Yisrael? There has to be a border crossing. There has to be a way of getting from one side to the other. And meanwhile, according to this Braisa, which is seemingly subscribing to the viewpoint of Rav Meir, this Braisa tells us that they do not combine. So it's not an issue of access, but it must be something else. So the Gemara now is going to give us what that something else is. Ela Amar Rabbi Chiya Bar Abba Amar Rabbi Yochanan Haynu Taima de Rav Meir. This is now our second approach within Rav Meir. Amar Kra Vayarden Yigbol Oso Lepaz Kedma. The Psukim in Yoshua, as we get now to the second half of Sefer Yoshua, right after the conquest, right? Anyone learning Sefer Yoshua in formal education, so you do the first half of Sefer Yoshua, because that's the fun stuff, that's the conquering, those are the battles. And then after that, Okay, the formal education taps out, at least here in America. Okay, and in Eretz Yisrael, probably they continue. But in other words, what happens after that is geography. It's a list of this tribe inherited this land, and this is the border, et cetera, et cetera. So from about approximately the 14th chapter to the end, it writes 24 chapters in total. So it's all listings. So we're in Pasuk Yedches in Yehoshua, the Hayarden Yigbol Oso Lepas Kedma. So the Yarden is going to be the Gvul, it's going to be the border of the eastern side of Eretz Yisrael. HaKasav Oso Gvul Bifnei Atzmo. So that means to say that the Jordan is a natural border. Right? Sometimes borders are just simply lines drawn on a map, and sometimes borders are actually natural borders. Right? I highly recommend, if you have a chance, the natural border between South Carolina and Georgia. So there's a great river to raft. So anyway, so natural, it's great. So anyway, natural border. So over here, the Jordan serves as a natural border. So hakasa vasu gvul bifnei atzma alamiata. So the Gemara says v'torah gvul va'aleha gvul. So the Gemara says, okay, but if you keep going in that Perek in Yehoshua, you're going to find other borders. And you want to tell me that these non-natural borders are also serving as ways of separating animals? In other words, on a non-natural border, right, a line on the map, which we happen to know geographically where exactly that line is, right? Isn't there a place where you could stand and you could be standing in all four states in this country?
Yes.
So fine. So in other words, it's a legal border, but it's not a natural border. So you mean to tell me that if I have sheep on one side and sheep on the other side, they're not going to be mitzarev? The Gemara says that's implausible. So the Gemara says, you're right. Shani hasam damakar zosti alachem haaretz ligvulosa saviv. Kula Eretz Yisrael gvulachadhi. So the Gemara says that if you're on land proper of Eretz Yisrael, and even though there may be borders bordering one tribe versus another tribe, but that's not going to create separation between animals. If I have animals on one side, animals on the other side, that won't create separation. It's a legal border. But vis-a-vis Eretz Yisrael still, even with all of its tribal borders, Eretz Yisrael is still viewed as one single unit. And so therefore, when I have animals on one side of the tribal border and one side of the other tribal border, that's not going to do anything. However, the Yarden, which is not only a border, but first of all, it's a border to Eretz Yisrael, which we're going to be talking more about later in just a moment. And on top of that, it's also a natural border, meaning the river itself serves as a border. And so therefore, that will be mafsik, that will separate. Ihachi yardinami. The Gemara for a moment now entertains the idea, well, if we're saying that the landmass of Eretz Yisrael is really one, so can't we say the same thing regarding the Yarden? Meaning, isn't the Yarden also part of that landmass? And therefore, if I have one on one side, one on the other side, it should not be a hefsek. Eretz v'lo Yarden. The Gemara says no. This idea that Eretz Yisrael in total is one landmass, and therefore there is no separation in terms of Maaser Behema, that's true for the land. That's not true for the Yarden. Yarden being a body of is a river, it's a body of water, and therefore it is going to be considered a separation. We have in front of us right now, up until this point in time, the position of Rav Meir, that the Yarden is mafsik. And within the Gemara, two explanations in terms of why. One is Rabbi Ami, and the other one is said over in the name of Rav Yochanan. Right? Rabbi Chia Bar Abba in the name of Rav Yochanan. Rabbi Ami says that it has to do with the fact that Yarden presents difficulties of accessing one side to the other. And so therefore, it's a function of just simple access. And that's why it separates. And Rabbi Chia Bar Abba in the name of Rav Yochanan says, no, it has nothing to do with access. But rather, what it has to do with is legal borders. Because the Yarden is a legal border of Eretz Yisrael, and not only a legal border, but a natural border as well, so therefore it's going to separate that which is on one side and that which is on the other side, having nothing to do with access. Rabbi Chia Bar Abba, Hainu Diktani Yarden. So now the Gemara points out that according to Rabbi Chia Bar Abba, it's very good why Rabbi Meir points to the Jordan River, because it's not just a river, but it's a river also serving as a border. But Ela Rabbi Ami Lesnu Lekula Naros. So the Gemara says, well, according to Rabbi Ami, so why are we talking about the Yarden River? It should be true by any river. If I have any river where passing from one side to the other is going to be near impossible, unless you have a bridge or something like that. So that means that according to Rabbi Ami, you're going to have the same phenomena, where the river is going to be mafsik. But the Mishnah and Rav Meir are only pointing to the Jordan River, and why not point to any other river? Kasha. The Gemara says, you know what? That's a really good question. That's a difficulty. Meaning, okay, it's difficult.
Are there any other rivers in Israel?
There are plenty of
seasonal.
Right. There are plenty of wadis in Israel.
They could be just using this as.
Okay, good. You want to defend Rabbi Ami? It's good. When the Gemara ends off the discussion with the word kashya, just simply, it's like a shoulder shrug on the part of the Gemara. Like, okay, it's difficult, but it's not. In other words, we could defend Rabbi Ami. So I don't know why sometimes the Gemara just, you know, ends the discussion and, you know, with the word kashya, and meanwhile, it's a defendable position. But, you know, like all good discussions, got to end at some point.
Why Rabbi Meir considers Jordan River as Israel proper and not the other side of Jordan River, which has halachic verification
we'll get to that. The Gemara is going to get there. Okay.
It's all owned by one person.
Uh-huh. It's all owned by one person, but because it's on one's on one side and the other is on the other side, they don't combine. It's pretty straightforward. The Gemara now is going to suggest the following Kitanai. This is Machlokas Tanai, meaning. We are now having a discussion in the Gemara about the status of the Jordan River as it's serving as a border. And the Gemara over here has a really interesting debate regarding the actual Jordan River itself. And anytime you're talking about borders and questions of what is a border, so it happens all the time. Meaning, at what point exactly does a border come to an end, and when does the next land begin? So let's take a look at a couple of psukim side by side. We're at the end of Sefer Bamidbar. And the Torah reads as follows: Ki atem ovrim es Yarden, Artsa Kanan. Artsa Eretz Kanan, v'lo Yarden Eretz Kanan. Okay, so a simple reading of the pasuk at the end of Ben Midbar says that when we cross the Jordan River, then we're going to be entering into the land of Canaan. Simple reading would indicate that after you cross the river, now you're in Canaan. So it sounds like the river itself is not part of Eretz Yisrael proper. Okay, so that's one possibility. And so is the opinion of Rav Yehuda ben Becerra. Rav Shimon ben Yochai Omer Harei Omer Me'ever LeYarden Yerecho Kedma Mizracha. So on the other hand, within the same parsha at the end of Sefer Bamidbar, so the Torah also over there outlines borders, and the Torah says Me'ever LeYarden. Now we're looking at it from the perspective of being in Eretz Yisrael and now noting what are the exterior borders. And so once you get past the Yarden, Yerecho Kedma Mizracha, and head eastbound after the river, then and only then are you going to be outside of Eretz Yisrael. And Ma Yerecho Eretz Kanan, Af Yarden Eretz Kanan. And just like Yerecho is obviously part and parcel of Eretz Yisrael, so too is the Yarden itself also part and parcel of Eretz Yisrael. Now, it's interesting. What the Gemara doesn't do over here, the Adkan Divrei Abraisa, and so is the Jordan part and parcel of Eretz Yisrael, Machlokes Atanayim, between Rabbi Yehuda ben Becerra and Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai. What you expect the Gemara to do, which it does not do over here, is what is each Tana going to do with the other Pasuk? And obviously what you have to do is you have to give some sort of defense of each Tana to the other Pasuk. The Gemara leaves that out, and so for homework, that's, you know, what you're going to have to try to do. Amar Rabba Barbachanam Rav Yochanan Yarden Elami Beis Yerecho Lamata. Okay, now, Rabba Barbachanam says the name of Rav Yochanan as far as the Yarden River is concerned. So it only goes from Yericho and below. Now, I'm sure everyone here is looking at a map of Israel. Everyone except for me. But it's fine. I previewed. So obviously the statement of Rav Yochanan that the Yarden River is only from Yericho and below. So he's not making a geographic statement, obviously, because as you look at the Jordan River, so it starts pretty high, right? Go up to the Banyas. It starts up in the Banyas, and then it just flows south until it gets to the Dead Sea. Seemingly from that point in time, that's it. It's a dead end. Right, with the pun intended. So there's no more. Thank you. No more flow after the Dead Sea. But as we're going to see in our Gemara had a tradition in which there was a flow off the Dead Sea. Okay, but look, you know, we're going back a couple thousand years, so it could be back in the day there was some sort of flow. In the meantime, however, the statement of Rav Yochanan is extraordinarily limiting. In other words, he says that the Jordan River is only going to have a status of river from Yericho until the Dead Sea. That's a small section of the Jordan River. Now, Lamai Hilchasa. So the Gemara immediately understands that he is not giving a geographic description of the Yarden, but of course what he's doing is he's giving a halachic stance on the river. But what halach is he making reference to? Ilei Melanoder. So let's say the person makes a neder. Okay, and this person had a bad experience. I know I'm giving an error to him. This person had a bad experience with the Jordan River, and that's it. He swears off the Jordan River. I am not going to go back to the Jordan River. I'm not going to drink from the Jordan River, right? I hate the Jordan River. All right, God forbid somebody should talk like that. But he makes a neder, and he says by neder he's not going to have any benefit from the Jordan River. So there, you mean to tell me that his neder is only going to be from Yericho and below? Meaning, when we say the Jordan River, so we understand it to be the whole river. And whenever you're talking about Nedarim, Halach, Achar, Lashon, Bnei Adam, you always follow what is the common parlance of people and how people understand each other. And the Gemara makes exactly that point. Halach, Achar, Lashon, Bnei Adam, V'chol, Hechad, Dekari, Le'yad, and Itzerlei. Whatever you and I refer to as the Jordan, and you and I are referring to the entire length as the Jordan River, so that's subject to his Neder. So Rav Yochanan cannot be talking about vis-a-vis the Halachas of Neder. So it must be that Rav Yochanan is talking about Maisa Behema. The idea that the Jordan River is going to be dividing is only as it relates to Maisa Behema. Meaning because, again, he understands like, now I know it sounds funny when I say this, he understands like Rav Yochanan, meaning, it's a funny sentence, Rav Yochanan understands like Rav Yochanan, or to put it in better terms, Rav Yochanan is being consistent. Meaning earlier he said that the Jordan River is going to be mafsik, not because of the access or the lack thereof from one side to the other, but it has to do with the fact of it being a border. And when is it going to be a border between Eretz Yisrael and Chutz Laaretz? That's from Yericho and below. What about from Yericho and above? From Yericho and above, so on both sides of the Jordan River, it's Eretz Yisrael. Meaning on one side it's Eretz Yisrael, on the other side it's Avar HaYarden, which is annexed portion of Eretz Yisrael. And so therefore, it is going to be, it's not going to be a border anywhere above Yericho. And the Gemara says that's what's behind Rav Yochanan. Tanya Namihach, the Gemara quotes the Brisa supporting this as well. Yarden Yotze, Mimar's Pamyas. So now we're going to be taking a tour of the Jordan River. So we start off from the caves of Pamyas. Now Pamyas takes the pay and replace it with the bays and the mem with the nun. And it's, you know, I know I did a little bit of, you know, a little massaging, but in other words, similar to the word banyas. So Mimar's Pamyas, Mahalach Biyamashal Sich Sivchi. And then, as it starts in the Banya, so now heads down to the Yamashol Sivchi. Right? We modern day refer to that as the Hula Valley, the Hula Valley. So Uvi Yamashol Tveria, then it flows into the Kinneret, right? Still around today. Uvi Yamashol's Dome, and then the next big deposit of water in the Jordan River is going to be the Dead Sea. Vaholech Benofa Liyamagadol. Now it goes to the Yamagadol. So over here, we have, the Gemara gives us a tradition that it basically heads down and connects with what we refer to as Nachal Tzin, and eventually flows out into the Mediterranean Sea. Nowadays it doesn't do that, but okay. But the Gemara is giving such a description, must be at one point that did it.
This is actually interesting, because this is 2,000 below. Dead Sea is 2,000 below of the Mediterranean Sea.
Right.
How quickly go up?
If I'm going to give you my best guess, at one point in time it wasn't that low. But that I'm guessing. I don't know that to be so. Amr Bichia Baraba, Amr Rav Yochanan.
Maybe for Hashem's atomic bomb.
Maybe. Lama Nikra Shmo Yarden. Okay, so the Gemara now, once we entered into the world of exploration of the Jordan River, so the Gemara is going to give us a little bit of Agarata. Why is it that it's referred to as Yarden? She Yored Midan. Because what it does is it descends from Dan. Dan meaning the name of the place, right? Originally when I read the Gemara, I thought it was just because of the Shevet. And maybe the Shevet's up there, but the Rashi says Shemakam. It just happens to be the name of the place. The Amalei Rabbi Abba Rav Ashi Asa Mehasa Masnitzula Anan Mehacha Masnitzula. We have a similar teaching, but we learn it from a slightly different location. And specifically from Yoshua Perek Yutes. Earlier we quoted from Perek Yudches. And so now in our tour of the second half of Sefer Yoshua, we're in the 19th chapter. Vayikru lo L'leshem Dan, B'shem Dan Avihim. So they refer to this as Leshem Dan, in honor of their father, whose name was Dan. Okay, cities were named after patriarchs, and over here, Leshem Dan was named after the father Dan. V'amar Rav Yitzchak, Leshem Zu Pamyas. Now the Leshem is actually the Banyas. And so, V'tanya Yotze Yarden Mimar's Panyas. And we learned in the Brisa earlier that the Yarden originates from the Banyas River. The Banya Caves. So, again, it's the same basic idea that it starts from a place known as Dan, which eventually comes and descends down from there. Okay, but the same basic idea. Amrav Kahana Zachrusi Di Ardena Mimars Pamyas. Okay, what is the source? and the main supply of water for the Jordan River. So it's the Banyas. The Banyas is providing the water source for the Jordan River.
So
if a person prohibits himself from drinking water from the Banyas through a neder, so it's the Lebekula Yardena. So now that you know that the Jordan is flowing from the Banyas, and he made a neder that he's not going to be drinking from the Banyas, so that means now that he's prohibited from drinking from the entire Jordan River. Zachusa de Dama Kavda. The blood source in the body. Where is it coming from? So the Gemara has a tradition that comes from the liver. Okay, I know. You speak to the doctors nowadays, they're going to point to the marrow of the bone. But nevertheless, so, from an empirical standpoint and from the Gemara standpoint, so the liver seems to be a rich in blood and a source of blood, and the Gemara's assumption is that the source of blood is coming from the liver. In fact, if I have a liver of a human body that dissolves and now liquefies, so it's going to be metame berevis. We know that revis of dam is metame ba'ol, and not only is a revis dam going to be metame ba'ol, but liquefied liver of a revis in volume is also going to be metame ba'ol, which means, of course, that the liver is really just congealed blood. It is just blood hardened. Zerchusa de maya pras. Now, in terms of the water of the world, the rivers of the world. Now, when I say the world, by the way, take us back to the time of the Gemara, where the world was really the Middle East. And we're talking about Iraq and Iran and Mesopotamia. And so we're talking about the main source of water for the Mideast region. So Zachusa de Maya Pras, the Euphrates River. Euphrates River is viewed as the main source of water for all flowing rivers. Amrav Yehuda Amrav, Hanodim Yimei Mei Pras, Osevichol Mei Moshe Ba'olam. Person makes a neder that he's not going to be drinking Mei Mei Pras. So he's not going to be drinking from all the waters of the world. How is this person going to exist? How is he going to survive? He probably is going to go to a chacham and have his nether removed.
It's a fair point.
Okay. It's like not sleeping for 3 days, right? It sounds that way. But anyway, so hechi dami ilem adam lo shasina mei mei mitapras mei prasu delo shasina haminara achrina shasina. So the Gemara says, well, wait 1 second. If his nether was that I'm not going to be drinking from the Euphrates River, again, he had a bad experience with the Euphrates River. And if his nether was I'm not drinking from the Euphrates River, so again, when you go with nether, you have to look at the lashon of the nether. His nether is going on Euphrates. So the nether was I'm not drinking from any water that emanates from the Euphrates River. And now the Gemara gives us the chain command of rivers as they present. We know by Maisa Bereishis, HaKadosh Baruch Hu created 4 main rivers, right? The Chidekel, the Pishon, the Gichon, and the Euphrates, the Pras, the Nar Pras. So basically, in order of what is controlling what, so you have the three rivers which are branching off into all the other rivers of the Mideast. That's the Gichon, Pishon, and Chidekel. But on top of that river, you have the Euphrates. And the Euphrates is providing the water for these 3 main branches. So it's Euphrates on top, providing to these 3 main, which then offshoots and provides water for the rest of the Middle East. So Va'aika Einasa de Medallion. So the Gemara says, I have many natural springs and that are flowing out of mountains. And these mountains seem to be higher than the Euphrates. And so you're making an argument that all water is sourced from the Euphrates, when meanwhile, it's seemingly we have higher elevations that are providing water sources, and it's hard to argue that they're coming from the Euphrates. So Amrav Mishar Shahanu Salami Deprasnenu. So the Gemara says that they're considered the ladders of the Euphrates. Okay, I'm not prepared to give geological explanations of what exactly the Gemara means by this. Obviously, the Gemara has an understanding that even these higher source elevation waters are going to be somehow traced back and sourced back to the Euphrates River. I don't have the geological knowledge base to give any kind of explanation to this. So right now, sorry to say, suffice with the Gemara saying they are the ladders of the Euphrates. V'haksi v'hanar revi'u pras. Now, the Gemara points out, okay, but in Maisa Bereishis, when we are introduced to these 4 rivers, and now we're presenting, that the Euphrates River is the main river, so why does the Torah say, Vahanar ha-revi'i hu pras? The 4th river is the Euphrates. based on what we just learned together, right, it's not number four, it's number one. Right? And why in the Torah does it give a ranking of number four? I'm Rav Nachman Yitzchak v'Temer Rav Acha bar Yaakov who prasta mi'ikara. So the Gemara says that even though it is the Euphrates, but nevertheless, it also goes back to the original. Rashi, who prasta nizkar lamala v'nar yotzei me'eden. Meaning, above in the Torah, when describing the Gan Eden and the actual area of Eden, so the Torah over there says, and there is a river. Now, the Torah doesn't qualify which river it is. But in other words, but now we know, based on our Gemara, that that river is a reference to the Euphrates, and that is the main source of the water. It's true in terms of numeration. It was given the number four, but in terms of primacy, it is the river. Okay, I know it's a lengthy discussion. I'll just bring it up right now. Aden, a place, an actual geographic location, is it a real place? Or is it some sort of construct of some sort of utopia? It sounds pretty clear from our Gemara and our Gemara's understanding that it's an actual geographic location. And the Gemara is actually making reference to how the Euphrates is coming out of Aden. Okay. Yeah. Yes?
He just said in number two, you know, there's a water pressure. Actually, there are underground channels that go from the
place
up.
Up. Okay. I mean, again, there has to be some geological explanation. Okay. Amar Rav Nachman Yitzchak v'Temer Rav Acha bar Yaakov u'prasta mikara. Sorry, read that. Let's continue. Tanya Rabbi Meir Omer Yuval Shemo. Another name of this river is also referred to as the Yuval. I know this. Shenamar, the pasuk says in Yirmiyahu v'yake Eisha Sul Al Mayim V'Al Yuval Yishalach Sharashav. So it is like a tree planted over the water, and al yuval, and over the yuval, so its roots are going to descend. So you see that this river, this main river, is referred to as the yuval. V'lamikur shmo pras. So the name of the river is actually the yuval. And meanwhile, throughout the entirety of the Torah, it's referred to as a pras. So we have this all the time, where an item or even a person goes by multiple names. So one is a proper name, and the other one is an adjective, giving a description. So if we're assuming that Yuval is the actual name of it, so then what is pras mean from an adjective standpoint? So the Gemara goes on to explain. Parim v'rabim. So what the water does is that the water multiplies. And that means to say that it is a self-generated river. The river is not going to be based on rain, and rain falling is not going to be the main source of the water of the Euphrates, but rather it's river bed, and I guess the underground channels of water going into it, that is what is supplying water to the Euphrates, and it's not based on rain. Misayel l'Shmuel. Now all this turns into a halacha. The Amar Shmuel Nara Mikipe Mivrech. Shmuel says that as far as the river is concerned, so where does it get its water? Mikipe, right, from basically its own. Its own boulders, its own borders, meaning it's a self-generated water. Now, all this becomes important. Why? So, in order to understand the upcoming Gemara, so just a little bit of halacha, because the Gemara here is focusing on halacha, and that is the following: a person wants to tovel in the mikvah, so there are two bodies of water that he can tovel. He can either tovel into a mayan or he can tovel into a mei mikvah. Mei mikvah means water of collected rain. Water of collected rain, or let's just simply call it rainwater. So rainwater can be collected into a natural depository, and you can go into the mikvah, and you can tovel in the mikvah, and you're going to be tahor. Now, this mei mikvah has to have one feature about it, and that it, well, first of all, it can't go through a keli. If it goes through a keli, it's mayim shuvim. But on top of that, also, when you're toveling in this rainwater, it has to be a stationary body of water. It cannot be in motion. It cannot be flowing. Obviously, when you go into the water, you're going to be creating some ripples, but that's fine. Meaning, but the water itself has to be a stationary body. It has to be a pit. And so the mikvahs that we create, that we build around Jewish communities, so they all have this feature where they're basically a pit and the water is sitting in that pit of water. Once the main mikvah, once the rainwater now is in motion, it's flowing, so it does not work, it does not serve as a tahara. Okay. And on the other hand, if it's a mayan, if it's a natural spring water, so natural spring water, so there you could tovel in them, even zochlin, even as they are flowing. And there would be no problem whatsoever with that flowing water because that is mayan. It is a natural spring water. And so now, if we were to ascertain that a certain body of water is more rainwater than it is spring water, so then that means it has to be stationary in order for it to be effective as a mikvah. On the other hand, if it's more spring water than it is rainwater, so then it can be in motion, then it can be flowing. And so now, even though the Gemara up until now seems to have waxed a little bit poetic regarding the rivers, but now it actually has halachic ramifications. If we're saying that the Euphrates River is a self-generated water source, and that the water is coming from the Mayan, from the wellsprings below, so now its flowing would be perfectly fine. And so the Gemara now has exactly this discussion. So, Upligi de Rav. The Gemara says that Shmuel's statement is in contention with Rav. So again, Shmuel's of the opinion that when it comes to the Euphrates, it is self-generated. It's basically a Ma'ayan. And Rav is now going to argue. Amar Rav Ami Amar Rav Mitra b'ma'arava sahad rabba pras. If the rain is flowing in Eretz Yisrael, so how do you know this in Bavel? You look at the Euphrates River. The Euphrates River will climb and increase in height. Now, interesting, by the way, Tosus already makes this point. Meaning in terms of the direction of flow, it sounds like from our Gemara that water is flowing from Eretz Yisrael to Bavel. Okay. Okay, so again, Tosus already makes this point. I mean, it's a simple reading of the Gemara. Take a look at the Tosus Divra Maschal Mitra. Mitra b'ma'arava sad rabba pras kan mashma the pras holech me'eretz Yisrael above. Okay. And again, in terms of understanding this from a geographic standpoint, it also will force us to reconsider what is part of Eretz Yisrael. But anyway, the point the Gemara is making, it goes like this. Rav is clearly understanding that the Euphrates River is going to be significantly affected by the rain. And so that means that Rav is of the opinion that the Euphrates River is rainwater and not Mayan, and it's not natural spring water. And so therefore, that means that according to Rav, would one be allowed to tovel in the Euphrates? So while it's moving, the answer, of course, would be no. Avu de Shmuel. So we have now multiple opinions in terms of how to look at the Euphrates River. And we go to the Avu de Shmuel. Avu de Shmuel is a comment that's made. We're going to see this again in Masechta Nida. Avi lehu leban asei mikva. For his daughters, he made a mikva. V'yume Nisan, in the month of Nisan. Now, let's go to Eretz Yisrael and let's take a look at, well, not Eretz Yisrael, but Avu de Shmuel lived in Bavel. But let's go to the Mideast region in the Nisan. Right? Nisan is the springtime. So what just happened in the springtime? So we just went through an entire winter. A winter of rain. And so that means to say now that, according to Avu de Shmuel, he views the Euphrates River as basically primarily rainwater. Now, his daughters are going to have to tovel in the mikvah, but they can't tovel in the mikvah in moving rainwater. So what he did in the springtime after heavy rains is that he created basically outlets of the Euphrates where the water pools into an area and remains stationary in that area. So he actually built a mikvah for his daughters in Yemei Nisan, in the months of Nisan. Now, if I go now to the end of the summer, the beginning of the fall, so what is Euphrates then? Not rainwater. Meaning the rainwater is already depleted. So basically at that point in time, it's natural spring water. Oh, natural spring water, so fine. So in other words, they can actually go into the Euphrates. Umatze biyume Tishrei. So if I go to Tishrei, which is the fall, so for that, he just made mats. Now what these mats serve as? So debate amongst the Rishonim. Rashi over here says that the mats are basically put under the feet of the girls, because if you ever gone into a lake or a river, so you know your feet are basically going to be filled with mud. And now for wading in the lake or in the river, that's great. But for mikvah, that's not good. That's a chatzitza. That's a barrier. It separates between the water and your body. So therefore, what he did is he basically made a floor bed for the river so that the girls can walk on the mats so that their feet remain clean. So then the mikvah would be the tefillah in the mikvah would be a good tefillah. Okay. Mikvah b'yom Nisan. The Gemara just, everything I said, the Gemara now is going to spell out. Mikvah b'yom Nisan sevela karab damar rav ami amarav mitra b'marav asad rabba pras. So as far as making mikvahs for his daughters in the springtime, it's because Avu de Shmuel subscribes to the opinion of Rav that we just learned together. Rav says that the Euphrates is very rain dependent, and in the springtime, immediately after the rainy winter, so the Euphrates is going to be primarily rain, and so therefore you can't tovel in the mikvah because rainwater has to be stationary in order for it to work as a mikvah. So therefore, in the springtime, in the beginning of the spring, so he had to create these extensions off the Euphrates River so that the water now is going to be stationary. Shema yirbu notrim ala zochlim v'havelu megusham imruba. Gemara spells out exactly what I just said. Because there may be more rainwater than there is a natural spring water. And so if the megushamim is the rov, if it does represent the majority. Meaning we don't know for sure that the rainwater is the majority, but in the springtime, it's a serious concern. So if in fact that's so then the water cannot be in motion. Fine. Umavse b'yuma tishrei. Now as far as making mats for his daughters in the beginning of the fall, so again, like I explained, because there's no longer any rainwater, it's all natural spring water, and that natural spring water serves as a good mikvah even while it's in motion. The only concern is your muddy feet. So you put the mats down on the floor for the muddy feet, and that will protect them from having a chatzitza. Another possibility in terms of why the mats, so see Tosfos Dibra Maschul Mate, B'yom Tishrei for another possibility of what the mats serving as. Anyway, Upligi Didei Adidei. Now, Shmuel is somewhat inconsistent. The Amr Shmuel Ein Hamayim Nitarim Bezochlin Ela Pras B'yom Tishrei. Shmuel made a statement that said that if you're going to go into flowing water, so it doesn't work unless it's Euphrates and unless it's the fall after the non-rainy summer season. Then and only then can the moving Euphrates serve as a mikvah. Why? Because any other time of the year, the Euphrates is a hybrid of spring water and rainwater. And because of the possibility that there's more rainwater than there is spring water, so then it will not serve as a mikvah when it's flowing. It has to be stationary. That's what was recorded in the name of Shmuel. Now, if you go back earlier this daf, you'll remember Shmuel said that the Euphrates is always going to be a self-generated river, and rain never affects the Euphrates. So the Gemara now just simply notes a somewhat inconsistent position of Shmuel regarding the Euphrates River. On one hand, he said the Euphrates is totally self-generating. On the other hand, Shmuel says that the only time you could tovel in the Euphrates is only going to be in the month of Tishrei, where the rainwater is totally depleted. Otherwise, you can't. And it's okay. And the Gemara just leaves it off as an inconsistency. This statement of Shmuel, by the way, accords with Avodah Shmuel, meaning it does go coordinate with the father of Shmuel. Anyway, the way I just presented the Gemara is one version of Rashi. See Rashi for another way to present the Gemara. But anyway, that's for our purposes. It is a succinct way of saying the Gemara. Let's quickly recap. We started off today by talking about creating each starfish for your animals. Your animals has to be within 16 mil of the shepherd. What if they're spaced out by 32 mil, but I have either an animal in the middle or a shepherd in the middle, or the utensils of the shepherd, or the dog of the shepherd in the middle. So the Gemara discussed that topic for today. And then a big part of today's topic is the Jordan River. The Jordan River, which according to Rav Meir is going to be mafsik, it'll separate between animals on one side and animals on the other side. So there are two possibilities in terms of why that should be. The Marayim debate. One possibility is that because the Jordan River creates inaccess from one side to the other side. Or the other possibility is that the Jordan River is a natural border. And a natural border between Eretz Yisrael and Chutz La'aretz just simply creates a status where it separates between the two. The Gemara seems to favor this second pshat and not the first pshat. As long as we talked about the Jordan River, the Gemara gives us a lot of agadata regarding the Jordan River. It actually takes us on a tour of the Jordan River from its origination of the Banyas heading all the way south. And the Gemara has on record that it flows out to the Yamagadol, to the Mediterranean Sea, which we could possibly construct in a path that reflects what the Gemara tells us. Gemara talks about the primacy of the Euphrates River, as opposed to the other three rivers of Maisa Bereishis, which are also main river channels, but the Euphrates is the primary river. And then the Daf ended today with a discussion about the Euphrates River being more spring water, more rain water, a combination of the two. And then that will obviously affect the halachas of mikvah and whether the Euphrates River can be used as a mikvah.